Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Lucy Battersby, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. This week we're talking about the US results season, the lucky opportunities emerging for those with enough cash or assets. We'll discuss the differences between what the market is telling us will happen in 6 months and what economists are saying, and quickly touch on the Reserve Bank board meeting. Today I'm joined by IG Markets analyst Kyle Rodder. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Lucy.
So Wall Street finished on a bit of a down note last week after a couple of tech companies missed analyst expectations. I think the big one was Amazon didn't meet profit expectations because of their higher costs. What else have you seen in the reporting season that's grabbed your eye?
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting one last week because I think a big part of the sell-off that we did see for Wall Street on Friday night was to do with the disappointment that came from Amazon and Apple's results. But on balance, it was actually a reasonably strong week for US earnings. Now, we're still looking at a pretty poor Q1 set of results, it must be said. But the tech space, which sort of dominated last week's, reporting, companies that were reporting actually exceeded expectations quite considerably. So we've got a blended earnings estimate at the moment. This is according to FactSet. For the IT sector of about 4.2% positive for tech companies across the S&P 500. And that's exceeding the expectations of the market going into the earnings season, which we're only estimating that earnings growth for IT stocks would be 1.3%. And that proved enough to take the blended earnings estimate for the S&P 500 for the quarter to around 13 to 14% contraction, up from around 15 to 16% the week before. So we had a lot of headlines moving the market around at the back end of last week, and justifiably, price went a long way in the one direction. But just in terms of last week, US earnings season wasn't so bad and probably spoke to, again, of, US tech's outperformance compared to the rest of the market.
I found Apple very interesting because they were one of the first companies to pull guidance back in February. They'd given guidance right at the end of January, and then just a couple of weeks later, they pulled it. And so their revenue for the quarter turned out to be $58.3 billion, which was a 1% increase. And what they had originally predicted was revenue of between $63 billion and $67 billion. So they were within 10% of the original guidance, but if they had missed held on to that guidance and missed it, they would have been heavily punished.
Yeah.
Missing guidance by 10%.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is always the fine art when it comes to corporate earnings season, especially in the United States, is that ability to manage expectations well in advance. And I suppose that's the thing that really spooked the markets in the end after Apple's results anyway, was that they have refrained from giving any guidance whatsoever about the future. So you've lost that potential benchmark. But I mean, the trailing looking look at the trailing results for the company were really quite solid, and they managed to, at least please the markets in that regard, beat the benchmark that they sort of set for themselves. But of course, they removed that for the future, and that's what sort of generated obviously some of the real concerns about the share and the share price, and then obviously the market as a whole going forward.
And how hard is it to determine a share price if you're missing that key ingredient of guidance?
Very difficult. And this has been, I think, the real challenge for people who consider themselves sort of fundamentalists, as they like to say, when it comes to investing, that rather than following anything else, they want to be able to obviously build some sort of metric on the intrinsic value of the company and calculate its the price that it ought to be trading at based on the actual company's fundamentals. Is that when the company does remove that guidance, it broadens very, very quickly the variability in the numbers that you come up with when you're trying to estimate future cash flows. And I think that's probably a big part of why we saw volatility jump on Friday too, is that when you do move that guidance, the markets lose a real anchor to be able to try and estimate future earnings. And when that goes, it by necessity, it leads to higher volatility because it introduces a higher level of uncertainty about the future.
Okay, thanks, Kyle. we're going to talk a little bit about the opportunists who are having a real picnic at the moment. There's a couple of opportunities that have popped up, especially in Australia, with the enormous amount of capital raising that's been going on. Institutional investors have poured billions of dollars into these into this astounding capital raising. Last year in April, the capital raising was about $5 billion, and I think we hit $5 billion in 2 days last week when we had NAB raise all that money. Investors, they've either been able to quickly liquidate another asset or they're just pulling cash from somewhere because all the capital raising seems to have gotten away so far. There haven't been any huge disasters apart from Webjet did struggle very early on, didn't they? But since then we've had like Lendlease did $1 billion. How much was NAB last week? Was it $3.5 billion? Newcrest has done $1 billion. If you've got the confidence to jump in there and the cash, there's some great opportunities.
Yeah, and it sort of shows you that there are participants in the market that are sitting on piles of cash that they want to put to work. I mean, I suppose over the weekend it was interesting looking at Berkshire Hathaway's results and you know, their famous conference where Buffett speaks to his shareholders, that they're a little bit more reluctant to put what is a pretty considerable stockpile of cash to work in this environment. But I think it does show that over the last couple of weeks, although markets remain volatile and the future in the very short term is uncertain, there are some big players, particularly in the institutional space, who obviously need to have a high pressure to strike a return every quarter on quarter, that they're willing to take some risks in this market, and then they've got the capacity to do so.
And I expect that the opportunities are in the growth stocks, not the stocks that you buy for dividends, given how dividends are being cut everywhere. Over the weekend, we saw the Chinese company Tencent take out a 5% stake in Afterpay, which people have always bought for the growth expectations or the takeover expectations.
Yeah, and it speaks to a very interesting point too. In US stocks in particular, using it as a valuable benchmark, is that we're seeing growth outperform value quite considerably again in this market as well. So it goes back to speaking to that environment where, particularly with cash rates low and that element of there is no other alternative coming through the market, that the place to put cash to work at the moment is in growth areas of the share market over and above perhaps value names. And yeah, that sort of internal market dynamics at the moment is certainly fleshing that out.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see all these merger and acquisition announcements in the coming months.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. We're going to have a talk about some issues that are on our radar at the moment. Kyle, the market has had this big fall. We were down, these ASX was down 35% from the February highs. And we've bounced back about 13% since then, but we're still quite low. And I wonder how well the market is guessing what's going to happen in the economy, given that we had some dire predictions from both Treasury officials and the Reserve Bank last week. So the Treasury official, the secretary, was talking to a parliamentary committee into the coronavirus and basically said this is worse than the Great Depression because we're jumping to a 10% plus unemployment rate, but in a very short period of time. And the market is acting like we've already gone through the worst and it's just kind of gradual recovery from here on. And over in Wall Street, they're up even higher from the bottom. So I thought, in Wall Street, they're up substantially. They make it look like we're bounced back straight away.
Yeah, it's a perennial debate in the market as to what price actually represents when you look at, say, an index in particular. Personally, I'm probably a skeptic when it comes to the notion of efficient markets and that, price isn't a reflection of future profit expectations, but there's other sort of reflexive elements to market activity where short-term trading dynamics, speculation, momentum strategies, and nowadays too you talk about algorithmic strategies potentially pushing price away from fundamentals, that perhaps the price of a market itself isn't the best reflection of economic fundamentals, and that's especially true when you consider, obviously, central banks' considerable role in the market now too. For me at the moment, this kind of dynamic is just what we've seen for the last 18 months just on steroids, where, say, in the United States, across S&P 500 companies, they had three quarters of negative earnings growth last year, and then the final quarter last year was a 1% growth in earnings, or slightly larger than 1% growth in EPS for that quarter. Yet we saw the S&P 500 push to fresh record highs quite consistently last year. So we've got market prices suggesting one thing, and it would be perhaps even conventional wisdom to infer that maybe the market's looking to a brighter future and they're discounting something better about the future. But I mean, even if you look at analysts' earnings estimates last week and throughout this entire reporting period, is that they're consistently being downgraded in line with weakening fundamentals. And I think it's the mystery at the moment, and it'll be the exciting thing to work out is, what's price telling us right now? Is it accurate? And with some of the volatility that we've already seen at the start of May, whether that we're ready to see a bit of a wave lower in prices to potentially better reflect those fundamentals.
The market is indicating that there's going to be a linear recovery. And one of the problems is that it might not be linear at all, because all the health officials are telling us we can't get back to business as usual until there's a vaccine, because of the risks of more waves of coronavirus coming through, as you can see in Singapore and Japan at the moment. So even if things open up, it might get shut down again. So it's a very big risk.
Yeah, and I think it's probably the biggest risk to the market too, is that, even if in the shorter term, prices are acting irrationally and not reflecting the fundamentals, that forecasts for both earnings from, say, equity analysts using, who typically use a bottom-up approach, and then economists and macro guys who are, obviously trying to work things up from a top-down approach, all seem to be on consensus, not everyone, but on consensus, seem to be assuming that we will see this big rebound in growth in the United States. In Australia, it's a bit different, but in the US, certainly, that you'll see what's constantly obviously being thrown out as this V-shaped recovery. But if the economy is a little slower to get back on its feet, and it could be for confidence reasons, or because there's a second wave of infections and we have certain economies have to go through a lockdown period again, then that sort of notion of a quick recovery starts to diminish very quickly. And I'm sure that wouldn't be something that the markets would respond to too kindly.
Yeah, I wonder how many epidemiologists are suddenly becoming consultants to investments, fund managers and investment banks. Speaking of central banks, Kyle, what's on your radar this week?
Well, I have to start with the RBA, just because they're meeting on Tuesday afternoon and aren't expected to do anything with interest rates, but they will provide something of an important snapshot on the outlook for the Australian economy, and that'll be backed up as well by the statement on monetary policy on Friday too.
And they have said they're going to discuss various virus scenarios in that statement on monetary policy.
Exactly. And it'll be interesting to look at establishing for market participants a bit of a scenario analysis on how this could unfold. So in a speech within the last couple of weeks, we did have Governor Lowe suggesting that perhaps by the end of this quarter, the unemployment rate would be above 10% and that we'd see GDP contract by 10%. It'd be very fascinating now as to under what scenario that those numbers are based upon, and considering too that there's a lot of optimism in the market at the moment that perhaps the Australian economy will be reopening a little bit sooner than previously thought, under what set of circumstances, where there is an earlier easing of restrictions, how will that fundamentally manifest in the Australian economy as well? So I think it'll be a very important and interesting document.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog, and feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.